Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Well, good evening, everybody. 8 o'clock here on a very chilly East Coast. I am Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for tonight. Thank you for taking the time to tune into another edition of At Home with Victoria. I know it's a busy television night for some of you. But before we start the show, Miss Victoria will not be joining us tonight. She's actually gearing up for her surprise anniversary vacation from the doctor. So all the doctor told her was to pack her passport, a swimsuit, some thongs, and a sundress. So I'm thinking Siberia, who knows, where she's going to end up. But I'm thrilled to have this person on the show tonight, Stephen Michael. Some of you know him by Stephen Michael on Facebook. Some of you know him as author Stephen Huff, author of The Kooks, The Nuts, and The Crazy. He's joining us here tonight to talk about his book. And we're going to talk about a little bit of what really makes a relationship toxic. A lot of us have friends, relatives, some have husbands and wives who are equally irritating and toxic. So we're going to go ahead and dispel that myth. This is going to be a call-in show tonight, so feel free to call in at 718-664-9364. That's 718-664-9364. We're going to start taking call-ins around the 8:15 mark. So before we get to Stephen, I want to make mention a good friend of the show, Anna Johnson. I tell you, this girl, I fell in love with a couple of years. We've had her on the show a few times, but she's reached her third Kickstarter goal of $20,000 to put together her new album. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with a little bit of music from Anna Johnson. You can find her at annajohnsonmusic.com. But this is Anna Johnson with Someday. And when we get back, Stephen Michael or Stephen Huff or both of them will be in the house. Don't go away.
Oh, not your average, everyday kind of girl. She walks along alone on the highway, opens up her guitar case to sing. Glad to meet you, here I am. She says sometimes when it rains I cancel my plans, catch all the drops in my hands, listen to the beat, beat, the beat, beat. Life can be so sweet. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
someday check her out at annajohnsonmusic.com. And quite frankly, I knew someday this would come. I've followed this person on Facebook as Stephen Michael. He is elusive, almost like the unicorn. I've gathered many laughs from his page. He's also an author under the pseudonym Stephen Huff. Joining us now is Stephen Michael, or Stephen Huff, whoever the hell you want to be tonight, Stephen. But welcome to At Home with Victoria. I'm officially taking your talk show virginity. I'm thrilled.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, Duff. How are you?
Am I on? Am I live? Am I rich and famous yet?
Well, you're certainly on. I don't know if you're alive or rich and famous, but we're going to find out.
Well, I'm definitely alive. I'm rowing in a little dinghy. I have a glass of wine between my legs. I'm enjoying a glass of Clos de Bois, and I'm rowing, and the sun is about to set, and I'm looking at this gorgeous downtown Seattle in Elliott Bay, and I'm in a little six-foot dinghy. Rowing around.
Well, that's pretty big for a dinghy, though, Stephen, you have to admit.
6 feet. It's better than 3 or 4 feet.
It is much better. There's much more room for your wine on a six-footer, that's for sure. But let's start off talking about the book, The Kooks, the Nuts, and the Crazy. What gives you the authority to identify the kooks, the nuts, and the crazy? I mean, I do follow you on Facebook. I think you're a wild hoot and holler, and you bring me much joy. But I know on Facebook some of the conversations can become very, very heated. You've taken a lot of flack from the extreme right wing. And so clearly you must have experience identifying, you know, the kooks, the nuts, and the crazy. Would I be fair to assume that?
Well, funny enough, I might actually be the extreme right wing. Nobody really knows for sure. But the way that I got to be an expert on kooks, nuts, and crazy people is from my parents, my upbringing. My parents
right.
absolutely hated everybody. They had no friends, and they would sit in airports or malls or wherever they were. They sat and talked about everybody they saw, and they made fun of everybody. And so I grew up looking at everybody, trying to figure out who I was in the world, and making judgment calls on how I saw the world and how I saw other people. And, you know, I think I take a little bit after my father, who was very humorous, and he kind of looked on the bright side of life. He had a great personality. He was a lot of fun. He woke up every morning in a great mood, and I'm a lot like him. I wake up every day. I'm in a great mood. I go out. I enjoy the world. I've had a fabulous life for 54 years. It's been pretty damn great, and I'm just enjoying life, and I love seeing people. I love meeting people. I've worked in careers where I have been fortunate enough to be around a lot of people, and I love psychology. I love human nature, and I love laughter, and so that's where it all comes from.
Yeah. What were some of the careers you had? I know you owned an art studio. You've been in the public all your life, so to speak, but what have been some of your careers?
Well, my father made me knock on the neighbor's doors when I was 10, and I had to shovel driveways and rake leaves, and we weren't allowed to sit. And when I was 14, approaching 15, I got a job as a stock boy, and I worked after school as a stock boy. And I got a job quickly at the age of 15 as a cashier in a grocery store where I was a smartass to all of the customers that came through the store, so much so that a lot of them would choose to get in my grocery line to check out. And we had a pretty good time. And then when I was 17, I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do with my life? I quit the grocery store, and I ended up working for a publishing company in Chicago called Hitchcock Publishing, which was owned by ABC. And I worked for them for about 3 years, and then from there, I met my partner, Tony, who I've been with for 34 years or 33 years, we can't remember, and we ended up moving to California, and I became a magazine and corporate art director, and I did that for maybe another 6-7 years. I started getting a lot of anxiety, panic attacks. I quit my job. I bought a house, a very expensive home in Laguna Beach. I asked myself, what am I doing? I thought I was going crazy. And I saw a shrink, got my life together, and I bought a gallery, an art gallery, downtown in Laguna Beach on Forest Avenue, directly on Main Beach, whereupon our business did extraordinarily well. We quadrupled our sales in the first year, and I met thousands and thousands and thousands of people from all walks of life, from homeless people, people in wheelchairs, people who were struggling in life, and I met extraordinary millionaires and billionaires, and I learned to deal with people over the next 16 years on a one-on-one contact, eye level, looking into someone's face, their eyes, their nose, their smile, talking to them and getting to know a little bit about them and their lives. It was a great learning experience.
Yeah, so definitely enough information for the book. Now, when did the book come out now? I know it's been a couple years. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been just a couple years.
And we were actually, I wanted to go ahead and make mention quickly, if you wanted to go ahead and pick up Steve's book, send $14.95, which includes shipping and handling, to Post Office Box 5037, Laguna Beach, California. When I first found the book, I was up to purchase it on Amazon, and you have been the, actually I went through my records, you've been my third author that has suggested to go through the sale through the author versus Amazon, because that book, I went down through the reviews, and it's getting five-star reviews. I don't know if you've been on there for a bit, but the reviews are fantastic, and yet you've not received payment one from Amazon.
Well, initially I did, but most of the sales that I've gotten are from direct sales, and I signed a couple of contracts with CreateSpace, and that is who you publish a book with through Amazon. And I signed on a bunch of things to go international, and I really haven't followed up on it to find out what exactly is happening.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that from also Papa Spike and Debbie Tibbles, friends of the show and everything like that. So I don't know. Papa Spike suggests that they're just going to go ahead and that they store up the cash until it's a one lump sum that's actually worthy of a postage stamp. But quite frankly, I don't know the exact – I should probably do a show on that and get to the bottom of that. But now, the topic of the show is identifying toxic relationships and how to get out of them. You've been very thankful to meet – I would say – rich people would be the most eccentric, and there's a fine line between eccentricity and crazy. But what is the defining? You know, I did hair for 25 years.
I might even be a little bit of both myself.
Me too. That's what makes us special. But, no, I did hair for 25 years with Elizabeth Arden Red Door, so it was a very similar clientele. And then, yeah, there's everybody has their own flavor.
Hair? Did you fry anyone's hair and then end up on Judge Judy where you dyed their hair hot pink and their hair is falling out in clumps and they sued you? Has that happened,
no.
Michael?
No, that has not happened to me. No. The people that I was working on were nouveau riche and very, very old wealthy. So you didn't do anything outside of the norm because, boy, yeah, my malpractice insurance that I carried was over $1 million worth. Just in case.
Really?
Because, boy, yeah, those people can be
wow.
very
Wow, oh,
litigious.
You should have been a doctor.
I could have been a doctor. I would have had a better salary, for God's sake. I just
What's
didn't have
the
brains to go to
What's the difference between hacking off body parts and hacking off hair? I mean, it's practically the same thing.
Practically the same thing, and actually you would probably think it's the same thing the way some of these people reacted, for God's sake. It's not a kidney. It's hair, for God's sake. I'll see you in a month. It'll grow back. But so what would be your discerning? When does a person become toxic?
When your life is so entrenched in theirs that you feel like you're going to help them or make an improvement on their life, and then you become frustrated because they're not doing what you're advising them to do, and you're spending all of your time agonizing on them. You wake up in the middle of the night thinking about them, and that's when you realize that you're not really living your own life and that you're spending so much time focusing on somebody else that you're getting crazy, and it's time to stop being crazy. And you know what? It's really you. It's not the other person. It's really you. You have to look introspectively at yourself. And I think that's where you finally realize that you're the one who's being crazy. You're making yourself crazy, and that's when it's time to stop.
Yeah, I can certainly agree with that. I have heard 1,000 times, and I do apply my own reasoning to the statement that whatever is bothering you and someone else is something that you do in yourself that you have to work on. But both you and I know that there are just some crazy freaks out there. You know, there's a fine line between what I'm looking inward at and then there's identifying somebody that, you know, quite frankly, this is not going to work out just because you're on my nerves so fucking much I can't even believe it. So that's the way I kind of go. Want to quickly mention the chat room. Thanks to all the new guests. Shannon Sybil's producing from the UK tonight. Once again, I want to remind everybody this is a call-in show, so please go ahead and call in with your questions for Stephen or your stories to 718-664-9364. Stephen, we're going to go to a little bit more music from one of these guys over here, and then when we get back, we'll be taking your calls. So, Stephen, don't go away. Keep floating in your dinghy, okay?
You got it, Michael.
This is Alex Guthrie with Where Oh Where. More with Steve when we get back.
Wake up in the morning and I'm not there, don't cry. Hey, baby, where? If you had a bad day and your life seems hard to bear, don't cry. Hey, baby, where oh where? February 14th, and you got some love to share, don't cry. Hey, baby, where oh where? You gotta learn that sometimes life ain't fair, so listen. Bye-bye, baby, I'm gone, take care. Why I'm gonna give you an honest reply. I got my reasons and a change in a lot of seasons. Sorry I'm leaving, I just can't take your guilt and your grieving. No, your heart is aching. My heart is swelling up with relief. 'Cause I'm gone. I'm gone. Said I'm gone. I'm gone.
Alex Guthrie is where you're working this weekend at Country at the Crossroads. Actually, it's a two-day festival, sort of like a country music Woodstock, starting Saturday, October 19th, ending Sunday, October 20th at 310 Highway 431 in Helfland, Alabama. So if you're in the area, feel free to go ahead and tune in. But how you digging the tunes, Mr. Stephen?
Oh, I was thinking during the music, which was quite lovely. I just wanted to point out that when I ended my toxic relationships, I took up with creative writing, a lot of outdoor activities, and Facebook. And one thing that's really cool about friends on Facebook is when you hate them, you can just delete them and block them and hopefully never see them again, which I think is something that people should actually start to practice in real life when somebody is disturbing or bothersome to you. Just click that delete and move on with your life, because we're all moving on the same conveyor belt. Our life is only going to be so long. It's got to be enjoyable. And learn to use the block and delete button a little bit more in your life.
Oh, I agree. And you know what? I will have to say that in my young years, I really have been one of those people that have been thankful enough to, I mean, I cherish friendships, I cherish family and stuff like that, but when people have become so disruptive, I really have no problem saying goodbye. And it's sometimes it's, on Facebook it's delicious because, yes, blocking the works very well, But it's also very awkward when you, someone you've blocked and deleted also endorses you on LinkedIn, and it's almost like, God, it's another window that I forgot to go ahead and close to stop the crazies from coming in.
Well, fortunately, I don't have a lot of that, but I do like that block feature, and I use it a little bit more frequently in real life, too, and it's easy because it's best if you end a relationship with no emotion. You just cut it off. You're not going to try to reason with the person. You're not going to try to get them to see your side. It's never going to happen. It's over. So just click the end button and move on. So many people can't move on. They obsess over their relationships and their friendships. And a lot of people are fake and phony anyway. They don't really want to open up and expose themselves to reality in daily life. And they're hiding and they're trying to make everyone love them. And that's why I think so many people cling on to negative relationships. They just can't let go.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that could be programming, too. I mean, everybody has this need to be loved and need to have attention, and I think it comes a fine line when that becomes a good thing and that becomes a bad thing. But I want to make mention real quick, Steve, that Tim Stewart is in the chat room, and he said, Steve, darling, come back. I'm pressed for time and almost out of whiskey. So apparently he's one of your Facebook fans.
I like Tim.
Yeah. What does Tim do? How long have you known Tim?
I've probably been friends with him on Facebook for about, I don't know, 4, 5, or 6 years. But, you know, I want to say I don't want to really call out any particular people on Facebook because I really like everybody. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings because I'm such a nice guy. And I want everyone to like me. I want everyone to like me.
Oh, everybody likes you. Absolutely.
Is my voice deep enough, Michael? Some of the people... Wait. Some of the people were going to call in to see if I had a very faggy, high-pitched voice or if I had a low, deep voice, if I was manly enough. Some of the bears that are on Facebook, you know, they a couple of guys have the hots for me, and I don't want to let them down.
Well, and that's you know, you have to cater to your public, Stephen. I mean, seriously, that is your money.
Well, you know, it's hard for me because really I'm a princess and a queen. And so I have to butch it up. I have to remember to keep it, you know, on the down low a little bit.
On the down low with your partner of 33 years. What does your partner do, actually?
Well, he does whatever I tell him to do, quite frankly. And he damn sight better. He just damn sight better. I told Tony, we've been together for, we don't even remember. We think it's 1981. But I told him, you know, if you will just shut up and do everything I tell you, our life will be wonderful. And it has been. But lately, he doesn't shut up as much. He needs to shut up a little bit more.
Yeah, you know what? Let me ask you. I mean, my partner died of 14 years. He died last year and I'm like that. What does it take to make a 33-year-old gay relationship work? You know, I wonder if it's a lot different from a heterosexual relationship. What do you think?
Oh, I wouldn't compare it. All I could say is that when I met Tony, he had the same interests in life that I have, and he was crazy, too. He's one of those crazy kooks. If I told Tony today that I wanted to go to, I don't know, Timbuktu, I'm booking a plane and we're going to Timbuktu, he would say, okay, let's go. And he would be up in the morning packing, and then I'd say, I was just kidding. I don't want to go to Timbuktu. But he would be packing, the dogs would be all brushed, and we would be ready to go, and that's the kind of guy he is, and you know, I kind of like that, because if I say something crazy, he'll say, okay, let's do it, and we do it. And that's how our lives have been for 33.
What are all these pictures of this fancy new boat you're on?
Ooh, we sold a business, we renovated a bunch of properties from California to Savannah, Georgia, and then we just sold a property in March or April it closed. We had a buyer bitch from hell. I mean, we ended up having to contact a lawyer. That's how bad it was. And I hate her, and I would love to go burn her house down or send. Oh, she said she's from India, and somebody told me I should send her some kind of like a little a spooky letter putting a curse on the house that she just purchased, but I'm not really quite that. So I'm letting it go.
Once again, another kook in the crowd.
Yes, she was quite a kook.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people are coming into America now, like in California. I don't know about other states in the union, but in Southern California, people from faraway places are coming in with suitcases of cash. Talk to any real estate agent in Southern California, and they're walking in with millions and millions of dollars buying up property like crazy.
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, it's a good time to go ahead and do that. Let's get political for a second. What did you think of the government shutdown causing America to kind of come to a grinding halt? Did you were you affected at all by it, or what was your take on it?
I was almost affected. I mean, I have a boat that's being worked on up in Lake Union in Seattle, and the only thing I want to be able to do when my boat is finished with this beautiful addition we're putting on the back of it is I want to bring it back down into Puget Sound, and they closed the locks. And the only way you can get from the upper lake down into Puget Sound is to go through these locks, but the locks are owned by the government. They shut them down, and I started panicking a little bit because, let's face it, the only thing that I really care about in life, Michael, is me and my life. Really, I don't care. And you know what? I was in business for most of my life, and when I hit around 48, 49, I just said, screw city politics, city government. I made the connection to regional, local, you know, national government, and I said, I'm just sick and tired of it, and I don't focus on it. So when the government shut down, I just thought to myself, whatever. If the government doesn't work here, Michael, I'll just move.
True. Canada's a lovely place.
No, I'm thinking like, I don't know, maybe Italy, or somebody today told me Belize is pretty.
Ooh, Belize.
I don't
know.
But
you know,
is Belize a good place to live? Should I move to Belize?
Belize is a lovely place to live. I would stay out of Italy.
Hold on. Michael, hold on. I'm going to text Tony and tell him to research Belize and possibly buy tickets. We might, you know, maybe this weekend we might be living in Belize. Who knows?
That's great.
Why
I was going to say,
why
stay
not?
Away from,
you know, that's
stay
what's
away
wrong
from
with people. Life is short. Just go. If you
absolutely
want to move to Belize, go. Move.
Absolutely. A little bit of spontaneity never killed anybody, but I was going to say, I mean, don't look at Italy because, boy, you know, us people are not liked in Italy due to that little Vatican
we're
place
not
there and stuff like that. Oh, no, we're not. We're frowned upon.
I don't have a problem, Michael. Everybody loves me. Let me tell you, I moved to Seattle in April, and all the people in Seattle said there's a freeze here that they're going to dislike you because you're not local. Well, I have met the most wonderful people all over Seattle. I actually run into people on the streets here that recognize me. And I don't buy into that. I think it's your attitude that lets you move through life. If you have a negative attitude or you're standoffish, people will be that way with you. But if you're warm, friendly, outgoing, and engaging and ask people about their lives, they will share with you, they will open up, and they will enjoy being with you. And I found that throughout my life.
Yeah. No, I agree fully. Like will attract like. We got our first caller, Michael, from the 817. Going to bring him on the line. Caller from the 817, can I have your first name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, this is Tom.
Thomas Alcorn, how are you?
Thomas Alcorn, oh my God. Yep. Thomas is one of my best friends on Facebook. I love and adore Thomas.
Well, that's very kind of you. Howdy, y'all, from the great state of Texas, the once Republican.
Now listen, Thomas.
Yeah.
I'm the star here. Don't you go taking over, girl. I will smack you down a bitch.
How can I possibly overshadow you? I mean, you've got
you
a book
will
cover, okay?
You will. Everybody likes you more. Once they find out who you are, I mean, you'll probably be invited back to the show a million times, and I'll be dumped like a rotten bag of old potatoes.
That can't happen. You have a book cover where it has a picture of you with that hairy little monger Zoe on the back, okay? You're holding a dog. How can you possibly go wrong? It worked for Zsa Zsa Gabor. You know, it's worked for Joan Rivers. I mean, they don't have a squat on you.
You know, I never was crazy about Zsa Zsa, but Ava Gabor, oh, my God. I fell in love with Ava in Green Acres when she walked out on that balcony with a little Yorkshire Terrier in her white Marabou peignoir. And I thought, oh, darling, that's exactly what I feel like in my head. Of course, I don't work like that, but that's what I feel like.
But that's a psychological effect of recovery from dysfunctional relationships, Stephen. I mean, it turned you into a, you know, a repressed, you know, Ava Gabor.
Well, Ava's dead now. Maybe I could take over her life. I don't know.
Well, you know, if she wasn't, you'd be a princess, and I think right now you pretty much got the queen thing down.
I do. I'm working on it.
Oh, hell
hey, Thomas,
hey.
How are you?
I'm great. I am great.
Well, he
Thomas,
has that little
Thomas,
dog
I got a question for you.
As a princess.
Thomas, Have you ever been in a toxic relationship?
Oh, come on, please. Are you kidding? I once dated a cattle rustler.
You what?
I once dated a cattle rustler who was fooling around with a hairdresser, of all things. A hair banger. That's where I learned to appreciate that expression. Anyway. Yeah, and then called me to get out of jail, you know, after they got caught. And I'm calling me from someplace out in West Texas. Can I, you know, can you come get me? Can you send me some money? I'm like, hell with you. By the way, you wore great designer clothes. It all went in bags out the front door by the time he got back. Needless to say, prison didn't wear well on him.
Well, prison never wears well on anybody, Thomas. But how do you identify a toxic relationship? What are your warning signs?
Oh, boy. You know, it seems to me that, you know, a lot of the relationships in your life take, their experience cues from what you experienced growing up. And I had very toxic parents. Their relationship was pretty toxic. It was, I would say love-hate, but I would like to think of it more now as existence and revenge, you know. So, you know, I think that's where we get our first cues on our interaction with our prospective partners. And then, God, they say, what is that, you know, you marry your mother? Oh, hell.
No, I wanted to marry my father. Don't say that, Thomas.
Well, I'm just, maybe in some circles, okay, you know.
Oh, that's just creepy.
Hey.
Oh, my God. Marry your mother. Oi. Oi.
Did you ever live in Arkansas?
Did I live where?
You never lived in Arkansas.
God, no. Closest I ever came was Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, no, they actually do that there. It's bizarre. But, you know, I think that relationships are funny things because, you know, people change, they grow, they start out one way, and by the time they spent 25 or 30 years with somebody, they become someone else. And a lot of times I think that because of familiarity and being comfortable in our situation, we hurt people needlessly, and the intention is not there. But I don't know, I think you just one day wake up and you realize that you're doing something that maybe isn't, you know, good for them and you, but it's hard, you know, because those connections are lifelong connections, they're forged, and, you know, hopefully, you know, you can still maintain friendship and care. But in reality, most people don't handle it that way.
Yeah, Thomas, let me ask you, how long were your parents together, or are they still together?
Oh, my God, 63 years of sure living hell.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what? I've got to tell you a quick story of how these people met because I've never heard anything like it. My mother was living in Germany, and at that time, proper Germans were scared to death of the American military, and a lot of the military, they liked these German girls, and of course they were hungry and needing things, and so they liked to go out with Americans. And my father spotted my mother through a friend, and she lived in an apartment building where it was just women; no men were allowed in there. And he looked at her that one day from the street, and he said, I'm going to marry that woman. And he bet with his friend. Then he followed her around for 3 years stalking her, and when she would go to work at night, he would have the landlady, who was terrified of him, go up, and he'd put coffee and nylons and candy and all these things on her dining room table. And then in the morning she would find them, open her window, and she was spitting mad, and she'd throw them in the street. Because she felt violated. So after 3 years, he decided that that wasn't enough. So he sent the military police.
Boy, Thomas,
to her.
It's just like the perfect setup for a toxic relationship, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean, if you begin with stalking, I mean, come on. You start stalking someone for 3 years. That's pretty wild.
Oh, I know, but it gets better because he sent the MPs up. They grabbed her. She was in her nightgown and curlers. And they put her in handcuffs, put her in a Jeep, took her to a fine restaurant where he had the flowers and the violin players, and basically they held a gun to her head and told her, you know, in German, eat or die. And she had one hand handcuffed to the chair. She said she'd never been so incensed in her entire life. She was in a rage. And so it was kind of like Taming of the Shrew. And at that very moment, she realized either he was going to spend the rest of his life paying for it or they were going to be blissfully happy. Of course, I know which venue she chose, but, you know, that right
there. And Thomas, are you their first love spawn?
Well, out of town. You know, I'm the oldest male.
You're the oldest.
Yeah, I have two half.
Do you have siblings and brothers who are still alive?
Oh yeah, I've got siblings. I have two sisters and a brother.
How do you get along with them? How do you get along?
Let me butt in here one second, both Thomas and Stephen. I've heard this many times, that the firstborn is the keeper of father's secrets, secondborn is the keeper of mother's secrets, thirdborn is the keeper of the family secrets. Let's go to Stephen first. Would you agree with that, Stephen?
Wow. I'm not sure I'm exactly following you.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think it depends on the age of the children and how far apart they are. But I know right. that for me, I was the one that they couldn't break, you know. I mean, I had a will of iron, and it was, I learned really quick, you know, I'm not going to let them beat me. So, you know, it was always a lifelong struggle there. But, you know, these little things kind of continue to go on. I mean, you know, I didn't know any better. I thought that was normal life. And I think that people just adapt, and they learn reactions emotionally and socially to what they're used to. So, you know, some people flinch when they get hit. I stand up and get ready for the blow and you know, and get ready to fight back. So my life has been about embracing challenges and, exploring and doing things a lot of people can't handle. I mean, my God, I work now as a ticket taker to the hereafter.
Well, my brother was like the little shining star, but he was rebellious and he never went to school or wanted to go to school. So my parents had to beat him up all through life. And then my sister came along. She's younger than I am. And she was the little darling that my mother wanted, a little girl. And so I was kind of the middle kid who was always just happy-go-lucky and easy to take care of. My mother couldn't really handle me because she said no matter which way she held me, I wanted to be down or up or look this way or look that way. And then as life went on, I did really fine as the middle kid, and my brother and sister were just an absolute mess. So I grew up thinking that my parents liked my brother and sister more than they liked me. So, you know, what I'd like to say is when you're a little kid and you don't understand those dynamics and that concept, that you start to internalize and you make things about yourself and you imagine things in relationships that aren't necessarily there. And those things that happen to you in your early childhood, as far back as you can remember, are so powerful that they stay with you through your entire life. They never actually go away.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I was just one of two. I was the oldest, and there was my sister. But my parents were ones that they hated each other, but wanted to stick around for the sake of the children, which, quite frankly, in hindsight, is never a good thing. But want to mention really quickly in chat, Tim Stewart had to go ahead and leave us. He said, "I can't stick around." But on the topic, let me just put this out: the most consistent feature of all your dissatisfying relationships is you discuss. So you guys go ahead and mull that over. Thomas, can you go ahead and stick with us for a little bit?
Sure.
Absolutely. Let's go to a little bit more music. This is Dave Andrew Smith with Bound. More with Stephen Michael and Thomas Alcorn when we get back.
Bound.
Smith with Bound. You can check him out at ReverbNation.com/David Andrew Smith. Before the song, we went to Tim's question or statement, the most consistent feature of all your dissatisfying relationships is you. Let's go to Stephen Michael first. What do you think about that?
I think he's exactly right.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Absolutely, I agree too. Thomas,
I think
what about
Tim
you?
Is exactly right. All everything that we do in life comes from within our own mind, and it absolutely stems from you. Everything.
You know, I agree with that because, you know, you can see that. I think one of the reasons that Steve is successful at calling out, you know, interesting people and information, even on Facebook, is that he seems to have this ability, an innate ability, to draw on their dysfunction and then challenge them or get them to react, you know, out of that core dysfunction. And it's sometimes very brilliant. Other times it's very disheartening. Other times it's incredibly amusing. But not everybody has that gift. And some people don't get Stephen. They don't understand always what he's going for or what he's doing. But if you're really smart and you can appreciate someone else who has that ability, it all works, and I think that's a gift. And so, you know, I can honestly say I think that he draws a tremendous amount of information and resources from the nuts and flakes that we know so well and love. You know, that's great.
Absolutely. I have witnessed Steve's rants a few times, well, more than a few times on Facebook, and quite frankly, they're usually at a time when I've been Chardonnay-induced. And I will go ahead and tell you, Stephen, friend to friend, I tell you, I enjoy so much when you are able to poke holes in an argument and the person becomes so infuriated that they can't even see past their face. And although I would like to contribute, I know I've been drinking, so I know, believe me, I've got into enough friggin' Facebook fights to go ahead and watch my tongue. But I really have to admire the fact how you really have the courage to bring someone in front of themselves. And I think that's a true art, Stephen.
Thank you. Well, some people I will engage and I will ream them down the hole, and other people I just genuinely like. I like a lot of people, so I'll back off. But yes, I do have some people right now that are pretty hot over some of my posts regarding feminism. I like to discuss Dr. Laura because I've been listening to talk radio in Southern California for 33 years, and I've picked up a couple things. I'm interested in psychology, and there are certain truths that people cannot escape from. They want to play games. They want to hide. They want to make their own lives, their own reality, and say that's not me. And I think when things start to hit home, that's when people get upset and angry.
Mm-hmm.
They can't face their own reality.
Yeah. Any one particular person or argument that you've had in the last, say, 6 months that you kind of had your own feelings or your own thoughts jarred?
Yes, my commentary regarding children. People always try to tell me if they have kids and their lives are an absolute mess, they try to throw it back in my face and say, well, you don't know what you're talking about because you don't have children. But in actuality, you know, I don't own camels or elephants or donkeys either, but I have a pretty good idea of what it would be like to have one.
Sure you have. Sure you have.
You don't have a camel? Come on, you've got everything else, Stephen.
Well, I do have a lot in life, but I don't have a camel. No, not at this time.
Yeah. Thomas, what do you do in Texas?
Well, I am I'm a hospice nurse. I chose to work with the terminally ill, and I absolutely love it. It's something I think you have to be suited for. The one thing I can say about those people is that when people actually know that their time is coming, and if they're lucid, they talk to you. They will put down all the social barriers, and they will share things with you, and you get to see a different type of person than you would in a normal, you know, atmosphere where everything is status quo. And I find that amazing. And, you know, that's where the real core of who we are as humans come into play when all bets are off and they're taking inventory on their lives. And so, you know, I'm pretty lucky that I've had the opportunity to experience that and also to, you know, to experience the intimacy of sharing someone's death with them. You know, that sure makes you think sometimes.
No, and you know what? Let me just go ahead and say this to you, Thomas. On behalf of all the times you haven't heard it, thank you for what you do. Stephen was in hospice for the last 33 weeks of his life. We actually documented it on YouTube. Every Saturday we would get on and we would have a reflective 3 or 4 minutes, throw it up on YouTube just to kind of document what someone who – and Steve was very aware that he was soon to pass. And we worked with the Delaware Hospice Organization here, and they were nothing short of brilliant and provided myself with so much more resources, because up till then he was bedridden for 4 years and I was doing everything myself with no breaks in between. So just please, from you to I, just thank you so much for what you're doing, buddy. It's truly a blessing. And it's not easy. Does it get easy for you, Thomas, just to witness this over and over again? Because usually by the time hospice is called in, there's a certain amount of time before that patient passes.
I don't know. You know, I think that when I do it, I allow myself to take away the best part of it, the personal part, the love part, the sharing part. And I know other hospice nurses who are wonderful at it. Matter of fact, there are several in our group. It's not easy or hard. It's just you accept it. It's reality, and it's the cycle of life, and it's birth in reverse. And so, you know, I just think that, rather than people are scared to death of dying, they fear their own mortality. Socially, we're not trained to accept that it's all clean, it's antiseptic. But when it really comes down to it, you know, we're not prepared, I think, as a culture to embrace it on a one-to-one level for ourselves or within our families. And I think that, you know, kudos to you for having gone through that and you know, exercise and taking, you know, so much time and love with your partner to where, you know, you were able to share that, because that's tough. And I see families who go through that all the time. And of course, that sure reveals really quick which ones of them, you know, are where in terms of their social interaction, their relationships with each other. Because the ones you think are going to be there aren't, and the ones who sometimes have fences to mend or who need to resolve personal issues, they're there, and they will share some of that stuff with you. So, you know, that kind of falls into play, too, with this dysfunctional relationship thing, because it's across the board, every culture, every race, every walk of life.
Yeah.
Thomas, can I interject for a second?
Please sure. do.
Exactly what you just said is exactly what I listen to when I listen to my podcast. I listen to the compassion from a hospice care worker like yourself. I listen to the people that are calling in that are dealing with somebody that's dying. It's so educational. And when you listen to podcasts and you listen to people talk about their lives and experiences, it enriches your own and it makes you stop and think. And I really believe that thought process that I've had for 33 years of listening to talk radio and podcasts are what have enriched me in life, so that when I think about what you are talking about, I can accept death. I understand it. And I experienced it from a very early age. And my parents were smart enough to tell me that you only care about people when they're alive and then you have memories when they're gone. But to put on a show and make a big stink for someone when they die really isn't important. What is important is that you enjoy your life, and that when somebody comes into your life, you try to enjoy them. And I think a lot of people are so stressed and so struggling with their lives, their jobs, their kids, their relatives, their aunts and their uncles, that they can't relax and they can't focus and they can't come to peace with those. And I think that's where a lot of the stress and the turmoil and the toxicity comes into play.
Well, you know, as you well know, when we've covered these topics and it come up in discussion, things like you know, euthanasia or the dying or executions, you know, public executions and various things, like capital punishment in particular, those are the things that seem to get people, even within our group, the most riled up. And I mean, sometimes,
yes.
If you're,
yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, they go crazy. They go crazy. But, you know, I think life is so fleeting. I mean, if you study the history of the universe and you look at, human beings as a species and just animals on the planet, the cycle of life and the history of the universe, we are just an extraordinary, extremely short blip of it, that to get wound up in it and to make something of it and to become all wrapped up in it so that you get so emotionally upset and frayed and torn just really is, it's just not worth it. I think I'll do that.
No, I agree too.
Primates with driver's licenses. We're primates with driver's licenses, and I'll tell you what, religion's another big hot topic for all of us, because you know you get such a diversity of people with attitudes and feelings and things that they truly believe, and yet sometimes you know you scratch your head and you go, my gosh, and their belief systems, especially in regard to things like religion and death and so forth, it enters into their relationships with everyone.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with Stephen with the fact that families who don't understand the birth in reverse topic, that the outpouring of this insane emotion is only for themselves to prove that they're grieving. For the last 3 years of Steve's life, his parents, who live, I'm not kidding, 500 feet away from us, didn't come over due to a little fight that him and his mother had while Steve was bedridden, and they basically didn't come over for 3 years while he was dying. And I'm
thinking, you imagine? I mean, who would do that to another human being? Someone that
and
you
your
love.
Son.
Who would do that? Yeah, you know what it is? I hate to use words like this, but I actually am becoming convinced of it as I get older. It's just evil. It's jealousy. It's bitterness. It's contempt for what you don't have or what you want. I mean, people really need to get out and exercise. I'm sitting in a dinghy in Puget Sound. I'm looking at the stunning sunset. When people hear the E word, they freak. And the E word is exercise. And people have made exercise such a toxic word in their own minds that they don't understand that exercise is really just about getting out in the world, enjoying life, take a walk, go do something. It relieves a lot of stress and a lot of tension, helps you deal with life. Being outdoors helps you become a realist. And I really have come to grips with my life. And if I were to die today, I could honestly say that I have had a fantastic experience. I have no regrets.
Well, you're not
how
afraid to get out there and do
how
things,
many can
too.
Say
I
that,
mean,
Thomas?
Very few, and you know, it's seize the moment, seize the day, live your life. You know, that's what you have to do because, you know, time is so short, and I've only recently figured that out to some degree. But, you know, I live vicariously through you, Stephen, in some ways. I mean, my God, my idea of a great afternoon out is lunch reservations and you know, going to someplace like Bergdorf's, okay? You're out there crabbing with a bunch of rednecks or whatever, you know, and trying to get some of that gas after you run out of gas, you know?
I was crabbing with a redneck recently. He's on Facebook. His name is Mac Forscript. And if he's listening, he is here in Seattle, and he and I went out crabbing together one day. And he's a real pain in the ass, but we had a great time. And, yeah, we were hauling Dungeness crab out of the Sound, and I learned how to clean and prepare them. And I made crab cakes for people that are friends of mine. And, you know, I think enough people on Earth are so caught up in all their crap that they really are missing out on the beautiful aspects of life. They're afraid to live life. They're afraid to enjoy life. They won't let themselves. I have a mother and a sister who have no friends. My mother is 75 years old, and she's sitting in a house with no friends. My sister is doing the same thing. They hate everybody. They don't get out and enjoy life. And you know what? I used to be upset about that. I used to try to help them, invite them to my home in California, and show them all the beautiful things. And I finally realized that they're just never going to do that. They're just happy being miserable. And so I finally had to put the delete button on it, and people will say to me, oh, that's horrible. That's your mother. But you know what? Just because somebody gave birth to you doesn't mean that they're really loving or motherly or that they live a life in a way that is engaging or enjoyable. And so when they start to bring you down, you have to finally realize that it's time to cut the apron strings, let go, move on, enjoy life. Yeah. You know, you can pick up friends everywhere. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Just to be stuck with people because they're related to you in some way is just bullshit.
Yeah,
but you know what, Stephen? You guys, people, there are people who just absolutely love their misery. I mean, they know it, they're comfortable with it, and I think they get their fulfillment and their enjoyment by making other people around them miserable, too. And, you know, I said that's toxic as all blazes, and once you figure that stuff out, you know, it's you have to look at it and go, hey, you know, am I making this better or am I making it worse? And we all have a tendency to do that. My mom was my mother was one of those, too, prime example. She suffered. Oh, how she suffered. And she loved it. Everybody had to suffer with her. All of her sacrifices. It was always for the kids. You know what? when it really came down to it, when the dirt hit the road, she wasn't going to make any moves. She wasn't going to do anything different. And people are like that because they are comfortable with their misery and their familiarity with their misery. And so
Water goes downhill.
And then when you decide to break away from that and not feed into it, guess what? They do not know you anymore, or they hold you at arm's length and they look suspiciously at you and go, "You've changed." And so, you know, I think that light bulb going off is when you realize, you know, hey, maybe I have it. It's for the better because I want to break this cycle. And I think that's why when we get into relationships, we repeat that stuff so much. Or maybe we carry them with us and we don't knowingly, you know, do the things we do. But, you know, when you start to figure it out, I don't know, for me personally, it makes me a lot more tolerant and forgiving. And then I have to look at myself critically and go, am I my mother?
Well, I'm sure you carry a portion of your
mother
with you. But what I'll certainly go ahead and say, and something that I've learned some time ago, is that no one has to learn. No one has to change. No one has to become anything different than what they want to be. And part of my frustration was saying, using the term, if you were only like this, or if you only understood, knowing full well that was not their lot in life. And quite frankly, especially for toxic relationships, the absolute best revenge is having a life that you're living well. That pisses people off more than anything.
I'm learning that right now. Yep, it is. True.
It sure does. That is
absolutely
true.
Guys, we're running out of time here. I want to thank you so much, Thomas, for hanging on the line so long. I appreciate your call, and you, honest to God, you were a fantastic interview as well. And
I love him. I love you, Thomas.
Well, I love you too, Stephen, and thank you for being such a wonderful host. I've enjoyed myself thoroughly, but I feel really lucky because I've got Stephen as a friend, and we have many more adventures to come, I'm sure.
Well, we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and have you back on, Thomas, in the near future. So thanks again for calling in. I appreciate your call, man. Take care.
Thank you. All right, good night, guys.
Good night.
Bye, guys.
Once again, Stephen Huff's book, The Kooks, the Nuts, and the Crazy, is available if you send $14.95, and that'll include your shipping and handling, to Steve Huff, Post Office Box 5037 in Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Stephen, an absolute pleasure finally chatting with you. I adore you more than I did before, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come to the show tonight, buddy.
Oh, I had a blast. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks so much.
I want to just shout out to everybody on my friend list in Facebook that I interact with. I talk to a lot of those people on the telephone. They write me privately. And everybody adds a little bit something to my life, and I find it really enjoyable, and I want to thank everyone.
Well, you add something to our life too, buddy. So you keep being you, and we'll keep enjoying you.
Thanks, Michael.
Take care. That was Stephen Huff, author of, again, The Kooks, the Nuts, and the Crazy. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, especially up in chat, guest 4911, guest 5787, guest 5829, guest 6634, Tim Stewart for tuning in, and Shannon Stewart, another amazing time up in chat. You're listening to At Home with Victoria. I'm Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for tonight. We're going to end with a little bit of music from one of my favorites, Drew Stevens, with Overboard. Good night, everybody.
Don't know where I'm going, I'm not sure where I've been. Sometimes I'm somewhere else, sometimes I just pretend. I'm here in the rain, I'm keeping up with you. I'm
You've been listening to At Home with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelley Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.